This is Larry Jones. You are listening to the Grace and Glory Hour of the Dyer Baptist Church with our co-pastors, David M. Atkinson and Dr. Lee Atkinson. We are coming to you from Dyer, Indiana. Our prayer is that you will be strengthened by the word today. Now, here is our pastor.
Please turn to the book of Nehemiah. We are continuing kind of the introduction to this concept in our relationships of communication and how important it is. Nehemiah is often recognized as a great leader, a great administrator, and certainly in all of that has to be good communication. We could study the communication principles of Nehemiah for quite some time, but I will try to not linger here longer than would be helpful to us. We observed quickly at the introduction to this part of the series on communication that God commands us to do certain things with our communication. We're supposed to speak always with grace, seasoned with salt. How gracious was your communication this week? We noticed that we need to be swift to hear and slow to speak. We often reverse that, don't we? And those were just a couple of the commands that we saw before we started looking at Nehemiah's example to us. We noticed how Nehemiah was straightforward and specific in his communication. We noticed that he was listening to the problems of others and concerned and moved to pray for them when he heard about their problems. Well, we're going to move now to chapter 2 of Nehemiah. By this point, Nehemiah has received the letter from the king. He's gotten the right for safe passage. He's gotten the rights to some free timber. He's gotten leave of absence so he can go and lead this building project. And now he's on site. He's at Jerusalem, the ruins of Jerusalem. There are people living there, but it's in a terrible, terrible condition. And I can only imagine how excited he was. Nehemiah, remember, was not born in Jerusalem and carried away captive. This was at the end of the 70 years captivity, and he was already an adult, so it's almost certain that he had been born in captivity. So he's finally there at this place he'd only heard of, and he sees how bad it is, and he's excited because God is paving the way for him to do something about it. But before he launches in, before he rushes into action, he does something very, very wise. So find your place, please, in Nehemiah chapter 2, starting in verse 12. "And I arose in the night, I and some few men with me, neither told I any man what my God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem. Neither was there any beast with me, save the beast that I rode upon. And I went out by night by the gate of the valley, even before the dragon well, into the dung port, and viewed the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and the gates thereof were consumed with fire. Then I went on to the gate of the fountain, into the king's pool, but there was no place for the beast that was under me to pass. Then went I up in the night by the brook, and viewed the wall, and turned back." And he talks about how he surveyed the damage. He looked around at the ruins of the city of Jerusalem. But notice what it said in verse 12, that he did not tell anyone what God had put in his heart to do yet. An important principle of communication is timing. Nehemiah must have been bursting with the news that God had sent him to lead the rebuilding project. But he got to town after that long journey, and he didn't tell anybody what was going on. And he took his time, and he surveyed the situation. He kind of got a plan formulating, and eventually then he said to the people what they needed to hear. I know that a lot of times in my communication, I'm impatient. Something is big in my heart, it's large in my mind, and I've got to tell people right now. Sometimes it's best to wait. If I'm honest, if I'm transparent, sometimes the reason that I insist on speaking about something now is because I want to talk about it now. It's not that it's good for them. It's not that it's going to help the other person. It's simply that I want to say it. It's actually kind of self-centered. And we need to be careful that we're thinking of others in our communication and that our timing is reflective of their needs. Can I be real practical, even though this isn't the section on marriage? So this means when hubby comes home after a long day of work and a stressful commute and he's hungry and tired, don't tell him what broke before, you know, he's had some time to take off his work boots or at least stick a sandwich in his mouth. You see, you might want to tell him, "Daddy, Daddy, this went wrong," or, "Husband, Husband, this is a problem." But it's not time yet. take your time in communication and share those things when it's the right time, not just as soon as you possibly can. Think about that for just a little while. Well, I want to move quickly on through the story. Nehemiah doesn't keep the plan to himself forever. Come to verse 17 and we'll see the next step. Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 17. Then said I unto them. Nehemiah has surveyed, he's developed a plan, and now he's going to speak up. And I picture it that he's now in Jerusalem, it's daytime, there's people around, and he finds some, you know, broken down piece of the wall, maybe, or a timber that's fallen over and charred, and he kind of hops up there, and he calls the people's attention, and he says to them, "Ye see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lieth waste, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Come, let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more a reproach." Then I told them of the hand of my God, which was good upon me, as also the king's words that he had spoken unto me. And they said, "Let us rise up and build." So they strengthened their hands for this good work. We see here, secondly tonight, that Nehemiah not only waited for the right time to share his heart, he also pointed out the problem and drew people's attention to what needed to be addressed. I don't know exactly how long some of the people have been living there, but isn't it funny what you get used to? Have you ever noticed that if you live in the same house for a long time, it gets run down a little bit, doesn't it? And the color scheme gets a little dated. And if you don't do anything and then you try to sell your house 25 years later, what happens? You got a lot of catch-up work to do, don't you? It's easy to get used to the problems around us. It's easy to not even recognize that, you know what? Our gates are still burned down. Our wall is still broken. And somebody had to tell these people, we got to do something about this problem. And Nehemiah, he didn't pull any punches. He didn't beat around the bush. He said, look around. You see the distress that we're in? Can't you tell that there's a problem here? But I love the way he did this. He didn't say, this is a really bad situation. We're in big trouble. Have a nice day. And walk off. Nehemiah said, there's a problem here, but God's hand is with us. And I can prove it to you. Because God has worked in the heart of the king. And the king has sent me, and the king has given us the timber that we need. And we can do this. And the people had a heart then to rise up and build. You and I are going to be called upon at times to point out problems to people. It's not very fun, is it? I mean, sometimes it's fun when we have a sinful, carnal spirit and we just want to be critical. But that's not what I'm talking about. Sometimes we need to lovingly confront people and say, look, you see the distress that we're in? This is not a good situation. It might be a spiritual problem. It might be a financial problem. It might be that something does need to get fixed at the house. But when you have to present that problem, don't just kind of dump the problem and walk away. Nehemiah said, look, here's a problem, but by God's grace, we can fix it. Let's work to do that kind of thing in our communication. Let's be clear about needs that exist. But then let's be quick to point people to hope in God. I appreciate also that Nehemiah didn't just say, don't worry, folks, because now I'm here. You know, he wasn't saying it's all about me. He says it's the good hand of our God that's upon us. And that's the approach that we need to take. We need to point people's attention to God and say, yeah, the problem is serious. There is a big need here. But with God's help, we can overcome. Well, the story goes on. Chapter 3 is kind of a list of all the different families and so forth that worked on different parts of the building project. We'll not take time to read through that, though it is interesting. I want us to come to chapter 4, and we see opposition mounting here. In chapter 4, we see Sanballat and Tobiah upset that somebody is trying to do this, and they're making fun of Nehemiah and all those types of things. But I want you to come now to verse 12. Because at this point, Sanballat and Tobiah aren't just making jokes about them. They're not just making fun of them. It's getting a little bit more serious. Look at verse 12 of Nehemiah 4. And it came to pass that when the Jews which dwelt by them came, They said unto us 10 times, or over and over again, these Jews who were acquainted with these other people came in and told us this same thing. Here's what they said. From all the places whence ye shall return unto us, they will be upon you. It's kind of an awkward sentence here in English, and my understanding is that it's a little bit difficult in Hebrew as well. But the sense seems to be this, that there were these Jews that were on Nehemiah's side, but because of physical location or whatever, they heard about the plans and the plots of the enemies. And they came to Nehemiah and they said over and over again, look, Nehemiah, everywhere you turn, there's going to be enemies. They are putting a plan together, and they are out to get us, and it is serious. And they were warning Nehemiah about the problems that they could be facing. Let's keep reading verse 13. Therefore, Nehemiah speaking, set I in the lower places behind the wall, and on the higher places, I even set the people after their families with their swords, their spears, and their bows. And I looked and rose up and said unto the nobles and to the rulers and to the rest of the people, be not ye afraid of them. Remember the Lord, which is great and terrible. Fight for your brethren, your sons and your daughters, your wives and your houses. And it came to pass, when our enemies heard that it was known unto us and that God had brought their counsel to naught, that we returned all of us to the wall, every one unto his work. Nehemiah here communicates in a great way and is a beautiful picture for us of balance in this kind of a setting. Understand, this was not a trained army. These were not mighty men of war. These were just kind of average, everyday peasants and people. There may have been some noblemen and some priests among them, but this was not an army. And it wasn't a construction team. But by God's grace, they'd been turned into a construction team, and now they're being threatened with war. And so Nehemiah has a choice. He can say, well, these are just rumors. I don't believe in what they're saying. Stand back on Tobiah. It's just talk. They're not really going to do anything. Let's just keep building. He could have done that. Or he could have said, oh my goodness, there's people that are upset with us and don't want us to do this, and now they're serious. They're talking about war. I think I'm going to go back to Shushan the palace. Let's quit. No wall is worth this. Let's all just go somewhere else and not have any conflict. He could have done that. But what Nehemiah did was neither of those extremes. Nehemiah said, look, there's a threat here, and I've been warned about it. We're going to do something about it. And I don't know what happened, but I picture them kind of going through the ruins of the city and finding some armory somewhere and, you know, blowing off the cobwebs and things. They find some swords and some spears and some bows, and Nehemiah gets his people outfitted for war. And he clusters them wisely by families, and he says, look, this is your family, and this is your family, and this is your family. And if you don't fight for them, nobody will. It's up to you guys to defend what God has given to us. Now, don't be a coward. Don't run away. Let's take the warning seriously. Let's be ready for whatever comes. And let's remember, the cause is about God. So he now has turned his construction crew into an army, and the enemy has heard about it. I'm like, wow, these people aren't easily going to be dissuaded. I guess we'll not attack them after all. And when the enemies gave up, what did they do? They say, well, glad that's over with, but I don't know. This is getting to be more than I expected. I think I'm going to pack it in. Nothing did, is it? It says in that last verse that we read, they got right back to the work. You see, in Nehemiah's communication, he received a warning, and he didn't ignore the warning, but he wasn't paralyzed by the warning. Amen. And it's really important for us in our communications that if somebody warns us of something, we pay it attention. We don't just dismiss it in ignorance and say, I don't care, it doesn't matter, it's silly. Nor do we get paralyzed in fear and run away. Nehemiah had a balanced response, and so should we. He responded by equipping the people. He then encouraged the people. And then he went back to work. Just because a threat of danger comes doesn't mean we give up our work. Just because we receive a warning doesn't mean that we stop and don't do anything anymore. Let's see. Can anybody think of an application for modern times along these lines? I'm struggling to come up with anything. Have we been warned about anything lately? We should take warnings seriously. We shouldn't be foolish and braggadocious. It doesn't matter to me. But neither should we be paralyzed. There's a place for balance here. I did remember that the children would be with us, and as I thought about Nehemiah's balanced response here, I thought about two different birds that we can learn an example from. The first is the ostrich. Now, you know what ostriches are. They've got this big body, and they've got these long, skinny legs, and this long, skinny neck, and this little bitty head. And ostriches are known for burying their heads in the sand. Only, they don't actually do that. But that's what everybody says that they do. And the reason, some say, is that they do dig holes in the sand for their nests. And then, at certain times, they will put their heads in there to rotate the eggs while they're incubating. What they will do in the face of danger is they'll lie down, they'll put their long, tan neck along the sand with their head, and it almost disappears. So there's this cliche, this expression that, don't be an ostrich. Don't just stick your head in the sand and pretend, that there's no danger. And we shouldn't do that. If there's a warning, if there's a danger, we should take it seriously. We shouldn't be like the ostrich. But there's another bird that we shouldn't be like either. That bird's name is Chicken Little. And see, Chicken Little had a different problem. Chicken Little didn't, hide and pretend there was no problem. Chicken Little made a problem bigger than it was. And so yes, tonight, in church, I'm going to read to you the story of Chicken Little. Once upon a time, there was a little chicken, and everyone called him Chicken Little. And one day, while he was out walking, up in the sky, a bird flew over, and it dropped an acorn, and the acorn fell down and, boop, bopped him on the head. Chicken Little said, "Wah!" Looked up, didn't see anything. And he looked down and didn't see anything. So he said, "Help, help, the sky is falling. Help, help, the sky is falling. I have to tell the king." And he went running down the road looking for the king. As he was running, he met Henny Penny. And Henny Penny said, "Bawk, bawk, bawk. Hello, Chicken Little. What's wrong with you?" And Chicken Little said, "Oh, Henny Penny, haven't you heard? The sky is falling. I'm looking for the king." And Henny Penny said, "Oh my, how exciting. Bawk, 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 bawk. Can I go too?" And they went down the road together, shouting, "Help, help, the sky is falling. Help, help, the sky is falling. We have to tell the king." After a while, they met Goosey Lucy. "Bawk, bawk. Hello, Chicken Little. Hello. Henny Penny, what's wrong with you? Oh, Goosey Lucy, haven't you heard? The sky is falling. We have to tell the king." "Oh, God, that's terrible. Oh, God, can I go too?" And they all went down the road together, shouting, "Help, help, the sky is falling. Help, help, the sky is falling. We have to tell the king." And along the road, they met Turkey Lurkey. And Turkey Lurkey said, "Hello, hello, 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 Chicken Little. Hello, Penny, Henny. Hello, Goosey Lucy. What in the world is wrong with you?" "Oh, Turkey Lurkey, haven't you heard? The sky is falling, the sky is falling. We're looking for the king. Go, 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 go. Oh, that's terrible. Can I go too?" And they all went down the road saying, "Help, help, the sky is falling. Help, help, the sky is falling. We have to tell the king." And they went down the road, and they met Foxy Loxy. And Foxy Loxy said, "Hello, Chicken Little. Hello, Henny Penny. Hello, Goosey Lucy. What in the world is wrong with you?" And they told him, "Oh, Foxy Loxy, haven't you heard? The sky is falling. We have to tell the king."
Nothing easier, said Foxy Loxy. He's back there in my den. But the king doesn't like to feel crowded, so I'd better bring you in one by one. Now, who wants to go first? Everybody wanted to see the king first, but the turkey was the biggest.
Gobble, 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 gobble. Me first, I want to see the king.
And he pushed everybody else away. Come with me, says Foxy Loxy, and they went into the hole together. Then there was a lot of squawking down there. Some feathers came flying out, and the fox called up, next!
Honk, 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 me, I want to go, me, said Goosey Lucy,
and she pushed her way in. More squawking, more feathers, and the fox said, next!
Bark,
said Henny Penny, and she jumped in the hole. Squawks, feathers, and then no sound at all. Right then, Chicken Little remembered that it was his turn to take out the garbage, so he went home. And poor Chicken Little never got to see the king. Is it too bad that Chicken Little didn't get to see the king? It's a good thing that Chicken Little didn't get to see the king. You see, all of his feathered friends had reacted so strongly to a danger they thought existed that they were heedless to a danger that did exist. Isn't it easy sometimes for our focus to get misdirected? And we become really, really concerned about something that isn't the biggest danger we face. It may be a danger, but there may be other dangers that are more serious, like a fox eating us, or like not remaining faithful to the Lord, or not loving our brother and sister, or not trusting Him like we should. It's a silly story, but there's a pretty strong lesson in it, isn't there? Nehemiah is the biblical example of balanced response to a danger when warned. He listened to the warning, and he did something about it. But then he encouraged the people and got back to work. I'm so thankful he didn't ignore the warning, but I'm thankful that he didn't get paralyzed by the warning either. Well, we'll very quickly see a few other principles from Nehemiah next in chapter 5. Would you come now to Nehemiah chapter 5? I'm sorry, I don't have a Nehemiah voice for you. You'll just have to come up with your own. Nehemiah chapter 5. This chapter is very interesting and important. If you're familiar with the narrative of Nehemiah, you understand that it's all about the rebuilding of the wall. And then tucked right in the middle of the whole reconstruction story is a story that you could almost think is a parenthetical and it doesn't matter, and why did the Holy Spirit put it in our Bible? But I'm so glad that He did. Look at verse 1. And there was a great cry of the people and of their wives against their brethren, the Jews. For there were that said, we, our sons and our daughters are many. In other words, we have a big family. Therefore, we take up corn for them that we may eat and live. Some also there were that said, we have mortgaged our lands, vineyards, and houses that we may buy corn because of the dearth. The idea is this. You had a group of people there in Jerusalem. Some of them were better off than others. And the ones that were struggling to make ends meet were having to borrow from the ones who were better off. And their Jewish brethren, who had a financial advantage over them, were holding them over a barrel, so to speak. And the Mosaic law was very specific about what you couldn't and couldn't do regarding charging interest to your brother, the Jew. And yet, in a time of great devastation, The wall is torn down. The gates are burned with fire. These people have come back from exile. They're barely making it. And now their own people are financially oppressing them. And the poor people go to Nehemiah. They're like, Nehemiah, help us. And as I think about this, I imagine everything that's on Nehemiah's mind. Do you think Nehemiah was working 8-hour days these days? Yeah, 12, 16, 20-hour days. He's in charge of defense against Sanballat and Tobiah. He's the administrator having to plan materials. He's in charge of security. He's in charge of construction and morale. And now somebody comes to him whining about their bank account. And I'm afraid if I'd been Nehemiah, I'd be like, look, I'm sorry, I am not the guy to handle this right now. I got things to do. But not Nehemiah. He was a much better communicator to that. He listened to the problems that he could have easily dismissed. Parents and grandparents, do people come to you with problems sometimes and you're like, I don't have time for this right now. I'm building a wall. Look, I'm sorry about your broken toy, but the gates are burned down with fire and I got things to do. Or do you stop and take time to deal with the problem like Nehemiah did? This is a great illustration of what might be called social injustice, isn't it? It was one group of people oppressing another group of people from the same nation. But you had the haves and the have-nots mistreating each other. It's as old as human history, folks. It's nothing new. But Nehemiah would have none of it. He was not going to put up with it. And so first of all, he listened to the people who were having problems. But he didn't just listen. Let's drop down to verse 8. After they explain the problems, he thinks about it. He is disturbed by what they're doing. And he gathers everybody together. Look at verse 8. And I said unto them, talking about the nobles and the rich people who had been oppressing the poor ones. I said unto them, we, after our ability, have redeemed our brethren the Jews, which were sold unto the heathen. And will ye even sell your brethren? Or shall they be sold unto us? He says, look, we just got delivered from slavery. We just got out of our 70 years of captivity. And now you want to oppress your brothers and make them slaves again? Is that really what you're doing? Don't you understand? Nehemiah was upset with them. And then it says that they held their peace and found nothing to answer. These selfish, oppressive people realized that they'd been wrong. They had nothing to say. And then verse 9, Nehemiah also said, it is not good that ye do. Ought ye not to walk in the fear of our God because of the reproach of the heathen, our enemies? He says, look, we've got enough enemies. We don't need to be picking on each other. Amen. And I'm so thankful for the way Nehemiah handled this. Because he didn't take the nobles and the elders and just throw them all in jail and hate them forever. But he confronted them with the truth. He shook up their perspective and said, look at what you're doing. You guys ought to be ashamed of yourself. That's not right. And he says, by the way, we have redeemed people. We have helped people. In this same chapter, he goes on to say, as the governor, I'm not even accepting taxes to feed myself and my people. I'm living off of my own savings account, basically. And I'm making a sacrifice, and meanwhile you're oppressing people? Come on, guys, you can do better than that. Amen. And you know what happens? They listened to him. And they made it right. And there was restoration. And there was harmony. And just like usual, what always happens in the book of Nehemiah, they got back to work building the wall for God. Nehemiah not only took time to listen to the problems of other people, Nehemiah confronted wrongdoers with a good example and with probing questions. Did you notice what he said to them? He says, will ye even sell your brethren, or shall they be sold unto us? He says, is that what you really want? Is that what you're after with this whole charging excessive interest thing? He asked them probing questions. And he himself was a good example. In our communication, sometimes we need to ask people questions to get them to think. But it doesn't do any good if we're a bad example ourselves. let's try to be the kind of people that can ask probing questions because we're doing what's right in the first place. Parents, do you question your children? Why did you do that? Was that very kind? Did that please Jesus? Do you think that helped others around you? Do you ask your kids those kind of questions? I bet Nehemiah did. I know David did not. And you know how his sons turned out. We need to be the kind of communicators that listen to problems and then confront the wrongdoers with probing questions and good examples. Well, the last one we'll take time for is in chapter 6. Would you come over there to verse 2? Chapter 6, verse 2. This is one little incident. It's three kind of similar things happened, but they're similar enough that I'm just going to focus on this one. Nehemiah chapter 6, verse 2. Sanballat and Geshem came unto me, saying, "Come, let us meet together in some one of the villages in the plain of Ono." And that is just so funny to me. Because that's what they were doing. They're trying to create panic. Oh no, oh no! But apparently there actually was a place called Ono. What a coincidence. I mean, that is beautiful irony there. Okay, now I can read it. Since I got that out. "Come, let us meet together in some one of the villages in the plain of Ono." But they thought to do me mischief. And I sent messengers unto them, saying, "I am doing a great work, so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease whilst I leave it and come down to you?" Yet they sent unto me four times after this sort, and I answered them after the same manner. If I were to make a loose paraphrase, you could say something like, they kept texting me and texting me. "You need to take a break. We need to talk. Let's have a discussion time." And Nehemiah says, "I don't think so. I got work to do." Nehemiah did not let pointless conversations distract him from what God had given him to do. We saw in chapter 5 that he did not dismiss the problems of people that needed help. But Geshem and Sanballat were not people that needed help. They were troublemakers. And Nehemiah said, "I'm not listening. I have no time for this nonsense. A great work is being done, and I'm part of it." How much better would we be at communicating if we limited the amount of wasted time we have in talking about unimportant things? And if instead we would remember, God has called me to do a great work. I'm glad to talk with people. I'm glad to listen to their problems. I'm glad to minister to people, pray with people, cry with people. But if it's pointless, we got stuff to do, man. Let's get after it. Let's monitor our communication and make sure that our communication time is valuably invested, not just frittered away when we could be serving the Lord. My. What an example is Nehemiah. And I would encourage you to meditate it. The story is delightful to read. Read through these chapters and ask God to help you be a better communicator.
Isn't that just like the Lord? So very much like Jesus.
Thank you for joining us today. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is graceglory7@juno.com. graceglory7@juno.com. Pastor David M. Atkinson also has a ministry on Facebook and invites you to connect with him there. Now, until the next time, remember to walk softly with the Lord.